Hello, listeners, and welcome to the Sounding Jewish podcast. I am your host, Dr. Samantha Cooper, and each episode presents my conversations with musicologists, ethnomusicologists, and sound study scholars who specialize in the music and sound of Jewish experience. I am absolutely delighted to welcome you to today's episode featuring Dr. Danielle Padley. Thank you so much for joining me on today's episode of the Sounding Jewish podcast. I would love to give you the chance to introduce yourself.
Hello, I'm Dr. Danielle Padley. I am a research fellow at the Wolf Institute, which is part of the University of Cambridge. And I am also affiliated with the university through their Faculty of Music as a teacher and lecturer.
Wonderful. Can you tell me about one of your earliest encounters with Jewish sound or music and why this was such a formative experience for you? And in particular, what kinds of personal or musical experiences motivated you to want to study Jewish music?
Well, the experience that really made me want to study Jewish music was singing in a synagogue choir, which I started doing at about the age of 13. And I just loved the music, and I had an amazing musical director who really nurtured me and my voice, but also encouraged me to try conducting. So I sort of became her deputy and became more important in the choir over the High Holy Days, when suddenly you're trying to sing in multiple services all at the same time, so you need multiple conductors. And so I sort of suddenly had this huge responsibility at about the age of 18. For running the music of a synagogue service on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And I really enjoyed the experience, and just the music is amazing. And it was that made me think, it took a long time, but it made me think this is something I really want to explore. And this is particularly that sort of musical culture of the 19th century choral sound that I really wanted to look into in the first instance.
That leads perfectly into my next question for you, which is if you might tell me about your scholarly trajectory and why you decided that your initial research topic was the one for you.
Yeah, it did take a little while. And I went through a standard music undergraduate degree and then a master's. And during my master's, we had the opportunity to do some research projects that were very much tailored to us. And I'd always gone down the avenue of looking at 19th century opera. And then we ended up being able to do a module on notation. And at that point, I realized I could look at cantillations in the Torah. And that was the first time I'd actually written on Jewish music at all.
Nachamu, nachamu, ami, yomah, Eloheichem, daveru, alei, Yerushalayim, vikiru, eleha.
And it was after that I started thinking more seriously about how I can incorporate my love of singing and performing Jewish music into my academic life. But it then took a sort of a 7-year gap where I went and worked elsewhere to actually really come up with a topic. And it was through one of the pieces that I sang really regularly in synagogue, and which I introduced to Kol Echad, the choir that I was running in Cambridge, Esayonai, so Psalm 121, that I suddenly was able to formulate a question for a PhD based around an organist called Charles Garland Verinder, who I've spoken about so many times before, who was an Anglican organist, but he worked at one of the Reform synagogues in London in the 19th century. And so that really allowed me to kind of explore this avenue of how Jewish music interacted with the non-Jewish world in Victorian England, which is kind of how I'm still looking at that world.
Nice. At what point in your career would you say you came to Jewish music studies? Did you find that your interest in the study of Jewish music was shaped by your experiences in graduate school? And likewise, what advice would you offer to prospective students or new scholars who are trying to enter this field of study?
Yeah, it definitely was cultivated in graduate school. So when I was doing my master's, just because it had never occurred to me to look at Jewish music before as an actual academic subject, I did a fairly mainstream undergraduate degree. The Cambridge course is fairly traditional. So when that idea crossed my mind, I really ran with it. And like I say, it took me a long time to really think seriously about what is it that I want to study here. I suppose in terms of advice, I think stick to your guns with it. I had a few knockbacks exactly, but when I first approached people about how I might study this topic, particularly in the UK, because there aren't many Jewish music scholars in the UK at all, I was approaching people who were more experts in the field of 19th century music, and their knowledge of Jewish music was so limited that I did sometimes get looked at like I'd dropped off another planet, just in terms of, the fact that they weren't sure that I was going to fit in the university environment. So I had to really kind of finesse what my question was, how I could tailor it to studies in academia in the UK, and also arguing the validity of what I was doing within the kind of area I was looking at, so 19th century music more generally.
Do you feel like you were able to accomplish that quest for validity?
I think so. I think I'm still doing it, and I think it's helped that where I've moved into with what I'm doing is less about Jewish musical repertoire per se and more about Jewish musical communities. So actually I'm looking at a wide range of geographical locations and events and styles of music. So actually it's not looking so much at the repertoire but more at how Jewish communities fitted in with what else was going on in Victorian England. And so actually, yeah, I feel like I've got a really solid place now.
That's great. Well, we're going to come back to your current research, but before that, I wanted to ask you about who your biggest mentors or advocates or role models throughout your journey have been, especially given that, as you say, there were not many scholars working on Jewish music-related topics in England. And so you really had to kind of stretch people's ability to understand the work you wanted to do.
Yeah, I really didn't know when I applied for the PhD who to approach to be my supervisor. So I almost sort of applied on the hoof, really. And I was allocated to Benjamin Walton, who's a professor at the University of Cambridge in the Faculty of Music. And he had been my tutor as an undergraduate. He's a specialist in Rossini and 19th century opera. And so it really took me by surprise when I was allocated to him. But he is so good at asking probing questions, bearing in mind that he knew nothing about Jewish music when we started. He came at it probably from a very different approach than if I'd gone to somebody who was more of a specialist in Jewish music, in inverted commas. So actually, it worked really well. And we continue to work together. He's been a real advocate for, like I said before, encouraging me to put myself out in more broader areas, 19th century music more generally. I do a lot of teaching for him and with him, and he's been a really important figure in my academic career.
That's great. Well, I'd love to give you a chance to talk about other people should they come to mind, but just for North American listeners who may not be working in the same vocabulary, what does it mean to have a tutor at an English school? And likewise, when you say you were allocated to him, what does that mean? Does it mean that you didn't go in knowing you wanted to work with a certain advisor and they paired you with him? Or is there another meaning locally?
Yeah, so I had to have an interview where I discussed what my research question was going to be, the research I'd done up to that point, And that interview was conducted with two members of the faculty, one of whom was potentially going to be the person I would work with. But ultimately, yeah, the faculty made the decision that Ben would be my supervisor. There was one other person in the country who had already written an article on Verinder. So actually, I approached her as a sort of initial person. She works at the University of Oxford. And for various reasons, when I was given the offer at Cambridge, partly because I live here, it made sense to stay here. And I really enjoyed working with Ben. In terms of being a tutor, the official title that he had when I was an undergraduate was he was my director of studies. So he was the person arranging my small group teaching while I was studying at the university.
Gotcha. Thank you for the clarity on that. Do there continue to be other scholars that you have formed connections with, whether they're local or international, who you really feel like you can go to with questions or concerns?
I frequently talk to Rachel Adelstein, who I know you've had on the program before. She came to Cambridge when I was running my Jewish choir here and turned up at a rehearsal. And actually, it was the day before I was going to the faculty to discuss my PhD topic. And it turned out that the person I was going to talk to had invited someone to come and sit in on the discussion because there was someone new who was also working on Jewish music. And as I was giving Rachel a lift home from the choir rehearsal that evening, I realized the penny dropped that it was her that was going to be in my interview the following day. And so she was one of the first people to know about my topic. And obviously, she's done some work on Jewish music in the UK as well. And she's been someone that I've gone to ask her opinion about things. We've recommended each other for various interviews and articles and reviews. And it's been a really nice relationship. And it was so reassuring to have someone else in the UK, even just for 3 years, working in a similar area.
I love that. Awesome. Thank you for sharing.
Welcome.
So let's circle back and I'll ask you where you are now with your research. You've mentioned previously that you're juggling a couple of projects at the moment and perhaps in flux a little bit, and I'd love to just give you a chance to meditate on that.
Sure, I'm principally at the Wolf Institute in Cambridge, which is actually an interfaith research centre. I'm one of the more historical specialists. There's and people working there are looking into all sorts of different things. Some people are influencing government policy with regards to interfaith relations. Others are looking at really ancient historical artifacts and so everything in between. So I fit somewhere in the middle. And the work that I've been doing is a project on, I've called it Jewish music making or Jewish music makers. So looking at Jewish communities in 19th century England, what they're doing, what music they're performing, and how music fits into Jewish daily life in 19th century England. And I say, yes, I'm sort of in flux in the sense that I'm coming to the end of this research contract and thinking about new beginnings. And I think it's one of the things I probably say to someone coming into academia that it sometimes takes a number of years to really refine your ideas and where you want to go. And I suppose it's taken the process of this research fellowship to look at a few different ideas, write a few articles, do some presentations, but actually then think, okay, now I'm really interested in this particular area or an area which sort of goes off at a tangent from this. And so I'm now starting to think more about even more everyday musical events. One of the things that I'm trying to do at the moment is put together a monograph on what I call musical moments in Anglo-Jewish history. So events where music was used by Jewish communities. So again, not necessarily Jewish repertoire, but how music was used in Jewish schools or at a particular fundraising event or a strike, for instance, a sort of workers' strike. How was music used at these sorts of events? So that's kind of where I've gone at the moment as well. I'm on maternity leave, so I feel like there's a lot of flux, but also quite a lot of time to really think about my ideas and think about where I might go from there.
Yeah, that's really wonderful. I so relate to the idea of thinking about musical moments. That has been a running theme with the first book I've been working on too.
It's been a really nice idea, actually, once I got my head around not looking at individuals or music per se, but actually, yeah, these events, it's kind of brought everything together.
Definitely. Yeah. And perhaps part of the reason that it's taken you a bit longer to figure out the precise area you wanted to work on is because doctoral degrees, at least in my understanding, are much shorter in the UK. In the US, you come to a PhD, you have 2 or 3 years of coursework, you have 3 years to write your project, and then they send you out the door, and maybe you even take longer than that, and up to 10, 12 years. But in the UK, I've been led to believe that you come in with your project, you write your project, and then you defend and leave
Pretty
to the
much. I
next one.
mean, yeah, I mean, certainly my experience was along those lines. You're supposed to take 3 years. I also took maternity leave in the middle of my PhD. So again, that gave me actually a very welcome break because it sort of took my focus away, but again, allowed me some time walking the baby around the village and thinking about ideas and, how I might structure chapters and things like that. But you're also encouraged while you're in, certainly in the University of Cambridge, to do some supervising, which is small group teaching. And I'm really grateful that I did that because, again, it allowed me to teach beyond the remit of just Jewish music studies. But yeah, all told, you're expected to take 3 or 4 years, depending on your funding and who you're working with. And that's it. Yeah. And then you're kind of in the extremely competitive postdoctoral stage, which is,
Rough.
yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I'm there too. I understand. Well, this seems like a great opportunity to ask you to tell me a little bit about teaching, given that you've just mentioned it. I know that many scholars will celebrate the opportunity to teach others as an extension of their research pursuits, but as you've suggested, it's taken you into other areas that maybe you don't specialize in. So I'd love to just give you a chance to tell me about your recent lecturing or teaching and how you feel like it's contributed to your research agenda.
Yeah, so actually one of the first courses that I supervised was a Jewish music course, which Rachel Edelstein was running while she was here. So that was a really nice opportunity to educate people in something that I felt fairly confident about. But I've done bits of teaching in more general 19th century music history. And more recently, I've been supervising some undergraduate dissertations, which are again in 19th century music. And I think the thing that I really enjoy teaching, and I've worked on some other lecture courses which involve this sort of teaching, is looking at historical sources. And I've realized how little undergraduates are really encouraged to look at first-hand material and critique it, really look into details of it. One of the things that I did a couple of years ago with my own PhD supervisor, Ben, who I mentioned before, was design a course which is called a history workshop. So taking, in this case, Beethoven as an example, and just exploring the material that's available, whether that's primary sources, secondary literature, but treating everything as a first-hand source and what you can glean from that. And I loved that. It was really interesting. And one of the things that I'm starting in January is my own lecture course, which I've called Music at the Margins of Victorian Society, which will have some Jewish content in it, but it's looking at the idea of music within marginalized communities during this period. So that could be anything from sort of any sort of non-Anglican religious communities to the working classes, women, I kind of want people taking the course to run with any ideas they've got. I don't want to prescribe what they think marginalization is. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what people bring, but also I'm really looking forward to giving them ideas of where they might find material that they might not otherwise have thought of looking, because everything's very much based in secondary literature. And it's been really inspiring just seeing students' eyes opened to the fact that you can go and just look at a newspaper that was published in the 1800s and get, yeah, first-hand correspondence, ideas to really then shape how they understand a particular period. That's been something that I really enjoy doing.
Jog on, me normal comrades, and then so mought it be that but on and on we travel till the day we Monday. And now to end mid-ditty, lads, let's heartily pray that heaven may give us everyone a lift on the way, a lift on the way, a lift on the way, that heaven may give us everyone a lift on the way.
Well, it sounds like working with primary sources and bringing your love of them to students has been a big part of your teaching. Would you say that that's also a big part of your approach to methodology in your own work?
Definitely. We're lucky, again, particularly in the UK, because, you know, it's a small country, but in terms of Jewish material, bits are few and far between. A lot of things are digitized. I use digitized newspapers a lot. But yeah, I think I'm really looking forward when I hopefully start my next project of actually going and doing some firsthand looking into letters and old newspapers, concert programs, those kinds of things. The other thing that I've loved looking at recently is old maps and just being able to understand exactly when you're talking about a particular community or subcommunity, where they are in relation to other communities. I've done quite a lot of work on the East End of London and Whitechapel, and being able to actually look at where certain musical events were taking place and how close they were to other things that were going on at the same time has been really exciting.
Hat ihr gesehen, a Bachel verhungert und verschmacht? Hier gehen sicken sichen dick die ganze liebe Nacht. Sich sichen dicker Winkele, a Tiere trepping Gas. Euch zuzulegen, euch rien, ist schrecklich kalt in Gas. Die Lämpelach, sie brennen sich. Drauf seinen sie gestellt. Nur wissen finden sie kann man nicht, was tut sich in der Welt.
And I get geekily excited about that and come home and tell my husband all about it. Thankfully, he gets excited too. But it is, yeah, something that I would never have thought to do as an undergraduate.
Yes.
But it's really key to what I'm doing now.
I love that. So now we get to the more challenging questions that I like to ask all of my participants. And I'll just preface this by saying that there are no wrong or right answers here. But rather, I'd love to just give you a chance to unpack these questions and see what you can make of them. The first question is how you understand the field of Jewish music. Are there issues or challenges with this field of study that you think scholars today need to remain attentive to?
Yes, I think the field of Jewish music is much bigger than I think people think it is. So having just read and reviewed Tina Fruhoff's massive collection, even I was struck by how broad this field is in terms of what people are researching and looking into. I think the challenges are predominantly external. I think people working in the field are quite sympathetic to it, particularly if you do live somewhere where there are other scholars working in similar areas. And that's something that obviously I've felt a little bit more like an outsider in some situations. But I think really trying to, I use the word validate before, and I'm not sure that's quite the right word, but I think it sometimes you do feel like you need to validate not just what you're doing, but the diversity of what Jewish music is, you know, that what does it mean to study Jewish music? I've done conference papers before in non-Jewish music conferences where I've said, well, actually, to describe Jewish music as see picture of 18th century, 19th century klezmer band is very similar to describing Victorian music, which is my other area, as someone sitting in a drawing room playing the piano. You know, there's so much more to it than that. And I think that's something that I feel like I have to keep emphasizing to people.
Yeah.
I think because there are so few people in the UK working on Jewish music specifically, it's taken me a little while, I suppose, to feel like I found my people. So I belong to various Jewish history organizations. And actually, I think I feel more akin that in that a lot of people are working on 19th century material. But I'm aware, for instance, that there is a big Jewish music studies community dotted around the US and in Israel. And I suppose it's feeling like I'm sort of somewhere between those two areas. I think sometimes England and the US don't always talk to each other very well in terms of Jewish music studies. So yes, I suppose I've been keen to make more of a mark. And actually doing this podcast is a really nice way of kind of making a connection. But at the same time, one of the things that I've been working really hard with here in the UK, as I said, when I was talking about my PhD and trying to validate what I was doing, is actually I'm not just working in Jewish music, I'm working in 19th century music and in certain other types of genres of music. And so you sort of have to be a bit of a jack of all trades and, you know, appeal to a large number of people. Certainly in terms of just progressing your career, it's just a fact of life, really.
Definitely. The final questions I have for you today are whether you believe that there is such a thing as Jewish music or an identifiable Jewish sound. Why or why not? If so, how would you characterize Jewish music? And if this question seems too essentializing, what questions about the music and sound of Jewish experience would you ask instead?
I don't think there is an identifiable Jewish sound. I mean, I think there is, in the sense that there are certain sounds where people will instantly go, oh yes, that sounds like a klezmer band or a Jewish wedding or things like that. I think there are recognizable sounds which feel Jewish, but in terms of there being a collective Jewish music, I think, as I've said before, that it's too vast. And I think that's something that's really important to the field. Again, I think when I talk to people who know very little about Jewish music, they expect me to be talking about a very certain type of thing. It was something that I came across a lot when I was running my choir, which I only gave up earlier this year, where we do a lot of concerts in churches or with other choirs, and they'd be surprised at how Western and how anglicized a lot of the repertoire we were singing is. I think they were expecting lots of augmented seconds and things that sound a bit like Fiddler on the Roof. And actually breaking those ideas is probably one of the biggest challenges to people working in Jewish music, in inverted commas.
Yeah, I hear that. Thank you for joining me today. It was great to be able to connect with you.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Sounding Jewish podcast. I would like to take this opportunity to thank our sponsors, the American Society for Jewish Music, the Milken Center for Music of American Jewish Experience at UCLA,
and the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee Stahl Center for Jewish Studies.
Tune in next month when I will be joined by Dr. Judah Cohen to discuss his ongoing work on American Jewish music and his recent shift into university administration. Bye for now.